ORT thanks its listener sponsors and Union Cab of Madison, a worker cooperative since 1979, providing taxi service in Dane County and beyond, 24 hours a day. Download our app for iOS or Android, or call us at 242-2000.
And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
This is the Access Hour. I'm Gil Halstead, your host. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation about Palestine. If you are interested in finding a way to have a positive impact on the dire situation in the occupied territories in Palestine, you can contact the Madison Rafa Sister City Project. And that email address is Rafa Sister City, that's R-A-F-A-H, Sister City, all one word, at yahoo.com. You can also email Kathy Walsh at Maddenhorn, M-A-D-D-E-N-H-O-R-N, numeral 2, at sbcglobal.net. They do very good work there, and supporting them is something that would be a good way for you to be involved if you would like to be. This is the Access Hour on WORT-FM, community-supported radio 89.9 FM in Madison. I'm Gil Halstead. We're going to be this is a recorded set of interviews that were recorded a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to introduce the two guests. We're going to be talking about what is happening in Palestine on the ground right now, what it's like to live as a Palestinian in the occupied territories right now. And we're going to be talking with a couple of people who have firsthand experience with that. And first I'd like to introduce Islam, and I'm going to have to ask you to pronounce your last name. Is it Islam Markawa?
Maraka.
Maraka. Islam Maraka.
Maraka, yes.
And Cassandra Dixon, who visits Palestine every year for a couple of months and works with an organization there that we'll talk a little bit more about. Cassandra, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us both on.
So before we began the recording, I was talking with Islam about what we try to cover during this hour. And I think we decided that the most important thing was to talk about what it is like to live on the ground in Palestine right now. Islam has been an activist working in Palestine for about 15 years now or more. So I want to begin with you, Islam, and give me some sense of what daily life is like in the parts of Palestine where you do your work.
Okay. My name is Islam Maraka. I am from Hebron. And everybody know like West Bank and Gaza Strip under the Israeli occupation since long, long, long time. The Palestinians are there, are suffering and facing the occupation, and they have really, really bad daily life there. I will be like specific and talking about my city, Hebron, because it have like really special way, special like Hebron divided to two parts, H1 and H2. More than 60,000 Palestinians living in H2 and H2 under the Israeli occupation. That means the people who are living there, they have like to pass every day and every morning through the checkpoint. Around 600 settlers living there, protected by more than 1,500 Israeli soldiers. The Israeli like working there to push everybody leave this area and to be totally Israeli area. And they're using like everything possible. Harassment, attacking, apartheid, discrimination. It's normal to be in your house and to be attacked by settlers. A group of settlers, they are so organized, walking around the city, harassing the people, attacking during the nights. It's normal that to have that feeling during one night to be burned in your house. Like what's happened, like the same happened like to family in Nablus. All the family get burned except one boy. So the life there is really bad. The harassment, we have daily harassment. We have like really, really critical situation in Hebron.
Is the settlement that you're talking about where settlers are coming from, where is it in comparison to the city? Is it in the city or?
Yes, it's. We have like so many settlements in the West Bank, more than 250 settlements. And around like 127 settlements like authorized by the Israeli. And the rest is not, but supported by the Israeli government. So it's normal to see settlements everywhere around the city, surrounded all the cities in West Bank. But what's make this case special in Hebron that the settlements is inside the city, controlling more than 350,000 Palestinians.
The settlement is within the city. And when you say that people that people have to travel through checkpoints every day, where are they going from and to? They're going from their home to where?
Yes, they have like to go through from their homes to their work, to their schools, to their life. But unfortunately, now most of these areas, military zone areas, that mean most of the Palestinians cannot go there except the people who are living there. That means if you go there, they don't care who are you or from where you came. They care about your ID. You are just a number. If your ID number written on the paper that they have, they will let you pass. If it's not, that you have to go back home or to go back. If your father living in this area, you are not allowed even to visit him because your ID number it's not written on the paper. They are soldiers working with orders. So they don't care.
And this is, people go from their home to their work, or sometimes they can visit other people if their number is there. What about the children who are going from their homes to school? Do they need to have numbers?
They don't have, but they have to be checked every day. The soldiers have to check their bags. The kids like get harassed all every day. And imagine this kind of kids who are living under this kind of condition. What you expect their future will be? Like it's delayed daily life. They are like every day late on their homes or their schools. So the life, it's really hard for these people and the Palestinian people in general. That doesn't mean the other rest of the city, it's not under the occupation. The Israeli are like free to go anywhere around the city or anywhere around the West Bank, arrest or demolish or destroy without any problem.
Now, you are working with an organization that is trying to make this a little bit less bad, I guess, than it is right now, to protect Palestinians from the kinds of harassments that... So tell me about that organization. What is ISM that you work for?
ISM, International Solidarity Movement, Nonviolent Direct Action Organization, use this kind of principles. We ask the activists, the human rights activists, to come from all over the world to join the resistance in Palestine and to be in solidarity with the Palestinians in their resistance to get back our freedom and justice and equality. They have really great work on the ground. They hold their cameras, especially in Hebron. They go to the street because we are different. As internationals, they have a privilege to be there. But as a Palestinian, I cannot be there. I cannot hold my camera to film the Israeli because I will get beaten or I will be arrested. But for him, he's different. He have like American or Swedish or like any kind of passport. So it's not easy to be arrested or like to be provoked by the soldiers. So they have like great work. They accompanying the Palestinian kids through the checkpoint, and they are watching any kind of harassment, trying to protecting the Palestinian families and publishing any kind of information that happening on the ground. They have like so many kind of works. They are like accompanying the Palestinian shepherds when they go.
That's shepherds, the accompanying shepherds?
No, shepherds. I mean the shepherds like...
people who raise...
Goats.
Right, yes.
Yes. So these people have really big problem, settlements surrounding all the West Bank. So that's mean you don't have enough places to go there. The settlers attacking and the soldiers attacking every day this kind of people. So they need like kind of a protection. And the only thing that we have, this people, that they're holding their cameras and go with them, trying like to give them like some space of feeling that everything will be fine. But it's not. But it's kind of a feeling, you know?
And so... you work with these internationals that come in, people like Cassandra, who we'll talk to a little bit about what she does. What is it that you do? You can't do what the internationals are doing. What is your role in this?
Yeah. Okay, like I am working as a Palestinian coordinator. And this organization working by Palestinian-led or international solidarity movements for many reasons. One of these reasons that... For any resistance action on the ground, there is repercussions. And these internationals, they come for like 1 week or 2 weeks or 1 month, and they will never understand what is going on the ground. So these repercussions will be always worse for the Palestinians than they are for the international. So any decision should be made on the ground should be made by the Palestinians, especially in this like sensitive situation. I work also as a contact person. Most of the Palestinian like families who have problems can contact me to send the internationals directly to their houses if any settlers attack. I facilitate the situation between the ISMers and the non-violence Palestinian communities. So this is like my kind of work. I take care of the apartment. You know, there is so many things I doing on the ground also.
Right. So when volunteers go over there, where do they stay? And are you involved in helping them find a place to stay so that they can do that?
We have like places like in Hebron, in Ramallah, in Nablus. And we use this apartment like to go out to all the villages. And it's place like to go back and have a rest after like very, very long day of working around these cities and villages.
And before I bring Cassandra into the conversation, Islam, can you tell our listeners how and why you began to do this work that you're doing now?
Actually, like, unfortunately, like as a Palestinians, the nonviolence resistance and the boycotting the Israeli economy, it's the only solution that they have, that we have. We don't have another options. So it's a great work to do on the ground. The people need somebody around them, at least to have the feeling that they are not alone on the ground, because like it's not easy feeling like to have hopeless. And we are not. We are fighting to achieve our freedom, and we will never stop.
How has your own life experience led you to become active like you are now. So do you have any other job than to work for ISM?
Yeah, actually, like, I am working as, like, volunteer. I have my work. I work in Hebron Municipality in the electric department. And I have my greenhouse growing, like, stuff beside my work. But the most important thing I am doing on the ground, my voluntary work with the ISMers. This is, it's something really important part of my life. And I will keep doing it, you know?
Do you have a family?
Yes, I have, like, I am married, and I have two boys and one daughter.
Cassandra, let me bring you into the conversation here, too, and maybe we could start with how you got involved working. This is Cassandra Dixon we'll be speaking to. How you got involved in the work you're doing there and what that work is. What is it that you're doing?
Okay. So I eventually did wind up in Hebron, but I started working in that area with Christian Peacemaker teams. And I intended to go to Iraq, but I never got there. So I'm incredibly grateful to fate, I guess, for eventually having taken me to Palestine, which is I just have, over the years, every year that I go, am more and more and more grateful for the opportunity to see nonviolent resistance in Palestine and the just really incredible determination and steadfastness of people who are insisting on staying on their land there. So I have worked with Christian Peacemaker teams in the past and now work with an organization called Operation Dove. It's an Italian human rights organization that works in the village of Tuwani. And at one time, their project there was shared with Christian Peacemaker teams, and so that's how I became connected with them. And their role there started in 2004 when children who live in the villages that are kind of outside of the village of Tuwani, but who always attended school in Tuwani, were being attacked by settlers on their way to school. So Tuwani and the village of Tuba are about a 20-minute walk apart. If you could walk along the road, which the Palestinian road, which was built to connect the two, but in the 1980s, a settlement was built on one side of that, and then later on, an outpost, an illegal Israeli outpost, was built on the other side, and the children were being attacked so regularly along that road that they couldn't go to school. And so that's how the village decided to experiment with having internationals accompanying those children. And it's been since 2004 now. This is a long time. So there are kids there that spent their entire school, you know, from the time they were in kindergarten until high school, they've done this trip with these conditions. At this point, they're accompanied by soldiers for a middle portion of it when the soldiers arrive and if they arrive on time, and then internationals do the other two ends and try to monitor to that and insist that the soldiers arrive. But it's kind of an amazing dedication to education and determination to continue using those villages and those roads and just remaining on that land has just been an amazing thing to watch.
You're listening to the Access Hour on WORT FM. We're talking with two people who are involved in human rights activism work in Palestine, Cassandra Dixon and Islam Marqua. And I want to ask both of you about a typical day. So let me return back to Islam. You listed a lot of things that you do on a regular basis. But say right now, if you were not here and you were in Hebron, what would your typical day have been? You get up in the morning and you do what?
Okay, like I go like every day. I go to my work. I contact the ISMers to see like how it's going on. And I have like daily connection with them. I have like to connect also the Palestinians committees who are working there to see if they have like any kind of activities to connect them with Palestine, with ISMRs, to see how much like capacity we have and how much activities we can cover. Also, I am try like to have like connection with friends and families who are living in this like sensitive areas, and to see that everything is okay and everything going well, because like during this work I get like really strong relation, friend relationship with them. So yeah.
And so, for example, if you were to get a call from some of the Palestinians living in the sensitive area who told you there are settlers throwing stones at children, what could you do about it?
For me, unfortunately, I cannot do anything. You know, because I told you I am a Palestinian. I don't have that privilege like the internationals. But our ISMRs, actually, they are like really great activists. They move directly. If they get any call from me or from any families, they go to the location holding their cameras and filming and trying to help in everything possible.
And so, Cassandra, what about for you, your typical day in near Tuani there where you are working?
Well, Tuani and the villages that surround it, the majority of people there are dependent on shepherding and kind of they say dry land agriculture economy there. So there are, I guess, people become vulnerable to settlers and also the Israeli military in the process of going about their daily lives. And it depends, like, where in their life they are, where those points of vulnerability happen. So school children are, they are what brought accompaniment to those villages. They are the reason that people living there decided to try having internationals there. And that continues to be a central part of what Operation Dove does there, is to be present for those children's walk to school in the morning and home in the afternoon. Recently, there was a really frightening incident where the soldiers that are supposed to kind of be present for the children were very, very late, and settlers came and attacked and chased those children. And so it was, I think, kind of a reminder to internationals there that, you know, yes, this may run smoothly on some days, but it's really important to continue to be here. The other thing that people do there a lot is go out with shepherds who are out grazing flocks and doing other agricultural work in that area. So there are olive trees and olive groves, and there are crops that are grown, especially this time of year. It's a very short growing season. But settlers from the outpost often try to, while I was there, there were 17 mature olive trees that were destroyed. There were fields that were destroyed. The settlers use a flock of sheep sort of as a weapon and take that flock of sheep and destroy crops with it. So accompanying those shepherds is a lot of what internationals do. There was just very recently a shepherd who was attacked by settlers who pushed him, and he fell and badly injured his leg. And then while he was unable to move, they beat him with sticks. And he managed to make enough noise that villagers heard him, and the entire village and internationals came, and the settlers ran off. So another incident that happened there recently, there are a number of villages in that area that were abandoned in the 1980s due to persistent settler violence and attacks in those villages. And there's an effort now to reclaim some of those areas. So there's called Samud Camp in the village of Sorora. And there were a group of internationals and young guys who were attacked recently there. A friend of mine was hit by chased by settlers in an ATV, like a four-wheel drive vehicle, who then repeatedly hit him and broke his leg in several places. He's been hospitalized. So I guess another thing that's happening there is demolitions and the threat of demolitions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those villages, it's not possible to get a building permit, so the Israeli authorities have continuously the ability to threaten demolitions in a lot of those areas. Some villages have been able to get a master plan approved, which is a long, complicated, and extremely expensive and also political bureaucratic process. And also another thing that happens is kind of a political trade-off happening where, you know, maybe there will be some other activity somewhere else that's making people look, making political officials look a little soft to their settler base. And so then there will be kind of demolitions that are in the pipeline that have the court process has been exhausted. And it's just a matter of the military commander deciding to you know, okay, going ahead with that. And so that happened recently in the village of Susia, which is kind of the other direction from Tuani. And soldiers arrived with bulldozers and destroyed, I think there were 7 buildings in the village that had demolition orders. Part of that area is a firing zone. The West Bank, about 17% of the West Bank is claimed by Israel as firing zones, where they just claim the right to use ammunition, including live ammunition, to practice for using that ammunition in Gaza. So those villages that are in the firing zone are constantly struggling through the courts for the right to remain there. So in being involved in those, monitoring those situations is also part of what internationals do.
Okay.
Operation Dove has a very, very, very long relationship there. And so I guess just sort of being available to decision makers in the community, to people who are involved with the Popular Resistance Committee there, and the young people who are currently working to rebuild this village, kind of being available to respond to situations as they come up.
That's a long list of things that don't sound very good. And I wanted to ask Islam now, the descriptions of the kinds of incidents that Cassandra just related, are those, how typical are those? Do those happen on a regular basis? I mean, to me, it sounds like a crime wave or something in some city in the United States. But how often do these kinds of incidents happen?
I am so happy that she mentioned all of that things happening on the ground, because Palestine, like, it's a huge field, and this kind of attack everywhere, in all villages, in all cities, around the settlements. The Israeli settlers have like organized groups working on the ground, and it seems so weird even for the Palestinians how these people are living, from where they do nothing except being on the ground, attacking everywhere, attacking the families, the kids, burning houses. So it's so strange. It seems even these groups of settlers supported like totally from the government to attack this kind of people, push them, leave their houses, leave these areas, to let the settlements extending more and more. And this is one of the most problem we have, that the settlements, how it's shaping the life in Palestine. Thousands of dunams like just disappearing by building these settlements and building the new roads. And even as a Palestinian, we don't have the right to use these roads. It's just for the Israeli and the settlers. And for us as a Palestinians, we have to go and snake between the cities, like to go to another city, you know? So this is the situation in general.
And it's daily.
It's daily. Mm. It is the daily life. The daily life. It's like when you like watch the news in Palestine and you hear that the huge number the huge numbers of the attacks by the Israeli during 1 month, it's like a war in another like country, you know, which is like the Palestinian facing this daily life during like decades.
You're listening to the Access Hour on WRT-FM, your community radio station at 89.9 FM. I'm Gil Halstead, speaking with Islam Maraka and Cassandra Dixon about life on the ground in Palestine these days and the work that they are doing. I want to... Cassandra said something earlier about how trying to keep things working smoothly for ISM and for Dove, that it's hard to make things work smoothly. For example, to walk these children to school every day without some incident. There's always something happening. But I want to go beyond that to ask about goals, changing this in a way so that these attacks would not be happening. What is the ultimate goal here of change on the ground that would make life livable for Palestinians?
Okay. Like, to be honest, the situation on the ground, like, getting worse and worse and worse. The attacking, not stopping. The demolishing, not stopping. Seizing land every day. But this kind of work, it's kind of like a huge solidarity with the people on the ground. It's so hard, like, to be attending in everywhere, in all cities, in all villages. It's not easy. But we do our best. Being in, like, so sensitive areas, critical areas, like, we know that these areas get, like, at a lot of attack from the Israeli settlers. So we are trying, like, to be there all the time. Actually, most of the settlers, when they saw the international holding their cameras, they feel scared to be, like, filmed. So they hide their faces and running away. So this is the only thing you can do on the ground, trying to help these kids and these families to have, like, at least, like, it's not normal life, but a space of safety.
And we've talked about some of the activities that go on that Cassandra mentioned in terms of knocking down buildings, of building demolitions going on. And I've read a little bit about some of the work you do here, and it says, Islam, that you are working with a housing project to help rebuild some of these houses. How can you rebuild the house if they've torn it down?
Actually, it was like an idea. We tried, me and another Palestinian friend and another ISMers, to rebuild economic house for a Palestinian families lost their house by demolishing. So because we visited a family, a Palestinian guy with his wife, and they have 5 kids, and they are really, really, really poor family. If the father work, they eat. If the father didn't work that day, they will be like, they are not going to eat. We tried to do something to this family. They even like their house demolished. Now they don't have place to stay. So we decided to build a house, stones and the clay, and do it by our hands, trying to do something, like, because to build a normal house, it's really, really expensive. But to collect the stones from everywhere, would use the clay and the dust, it's more cheap. Actually, it was like our first house. We built the house and prepared it from outside. We started to work from inside. We prepared the ground, but unfortunately, we didn't have enough money to continue. So we stopped around like 1 month and a half. But unfortunately, the Israeli came and demolished this house again. It was so hard to do this experience again, because it needs kind of money and it needs a lot of time to do. But I still like thinking about this idea, and I will never like, we'll never give it. We will try it again.
You're listening to the Access Hour on WORT FM 89.9, your listener-supported community radio station. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors.
Cassandra, is Dove doing anything along those lines in terms of trying to rebuild houses that are destroyed, that are demolished?
So Operation Dove, let's see, they don't so much, their role there is to accompany and
okay.
to support
right.
and not, right? And so, but in that area, this rebuilding that's going on in the village of Thorora is just an amazing story. So this village was abandoned because people were so repeatedly attacked and terrorized there in the night by settlers that eventually they had to stop living in that village. And the homes there are several cave homes there.
What do you mean by cave home? What's a cave home?
So they're homes where the majority of the house is in a naturally occurring cave that has been expanded and sometimes built out the front. These caves are like, they're the best possible home for that climate because they stay cooler in the summer and they're very warm in the winter, and they're really amazing homes. And so in Sorora, this village is in a very beautiful, beautifully situated place on a hillside where, I mean, you can totally see why a village came to be there. It's a perfect spot for it. So this effort by people from a group of villages there to kind of reoccupy that space has been really amazing to watch, and it's been a huge honor to be a little tiny part of that. So they have now rebuilt, which included removing a lot of rubble from inside and reconstructing walls. And there's one home there that now is inhabitable. While I was there, we did get to help a little bit with building a bathroom that's attached, not attached to it, but is sort of available to that house. And now there's a family from the city of Yatta, which, so when people were driven out of that area by violence, a lot of families had family members who were living elsewhere in the area and so moved, but didn't move all that far. And the land is still owned by Palestinian families. So there is now a family that's a part of the larger family that owns land there that's planning to move back. So to actually be able to live on that land again after so many years of it being inaccessible to the family is really amazing to see, and a real statement of how strong the nonviolent resistance is in those villages, that people have managed to build cooperation between the villages and between each other and involve internationals. And I think that there were some NGOs from Europe that were involved in helping with building materials, procuring building materials, and there have been Israeli peace activists involved over the years there. So this is just, it's amazing to watch.
So,
Islam,
do you know about this project or one similar to it? Does it sound like, it sounds like one good thing that's happening in the midst of a lot of terrible things?
Yeah, I heard like there is like many organizations, like also like OCHA, trying to help these people who have like lost their houses by bringing like kind of containers or things like that, because it's really hard like to leave these people like alone without like a place even to live. Especially like it's so normal in Palestine to hear that houses demolished, like or this week like 5 houses demolished. It's something normal. So there is like many good like organizations working on the ground. There is a great of activists, international activists, who are working, coming from everywhere, and they have a strong belief about the Palestinian right of freedom. Yeah, so we hear a lot about this kind of a project.
So,
but Gil, you asked what would have to happen.
Right, I was going to return to that, Cassandra, to ask both of you about solutions.
I think that in order for people's daily lives to begin to have any kind of semblance of security and, you know, the freedom to just make choices for your family, to decide to go to school and go to work and not be thinking that you're going to encounter violence, either state violence or settler violence on the way there, the outposts and the settlements have to be removed from the West Bank. It won't get better until that's the case, is my personal opinion. I think that I've led a pretty sheltered life in a lot of ways, and I don't have a lot of experience in my own daily life with overt physical interpersonal violence. Like, it's an aberration to me. Yes, it happens in our society, but it's shocking. It's still shocking. And there, the ability to be really surprised and shocked by violence is a luxury. It's a statement of privilege. It's not the way things are there. And it's not tenable for people to live and grow and thrive generation after generation with that happening in their lives, with the thought that any day when your kids set out to go to school, that people may attack them on the way there, and soldiers may stand by and do nothing. The current situation with the, you know, it is the role of those illegal outposts to expand and expand and expand. They're not there just to remain there. They're there to take. And as long as Palestinians living in those villages have to every day, every single day, every hour of the day resist that, there's not going to be calm or normalcy or a smooth day.
So Islam, Cassandra says that the only solution she sees would be for these settlements to be physically removed, for them to go away. What's your answer to people when you are traveling on the tour now? You are about the work you're doing now and what the situation on the ground is in Palestine, and people say to you, "So, how can the violence be stopped, and how can peace come to Palestine? You have a solution?"
It's really complicated to talk about this thing. And I have like to be logical when I talk about the situation on the ground. It's not easy to say the settlements should be removed, because when you see the Israeli, how they are racing the time to build more and more settlements, thousands of apartments in these settlements are free. Nobody live with it. Why the government keep like racing the time to build more and more settlements? So that means they have like long-term strategy to seize as much as they can from the Palestinian territories. We are talking about solutions, peace process solutions, one-state solution and two-state solution. But let, as I said, be logical. I will ask you a question as a guy who like away from the situation, and let's think about it. Imagine that one day you wake up and you find like somebody occupied your country, and 70% of this country disappeared, and the international community recognized this country as a legal country, and they left for you 30%, and this 30%, 40% of it are totally under them. Control that you are not allowed to use, or you are not allowed to build any houses there, and more than 650,000 settlers in these areas, and you expect in 2015 there will be around 2 million. And after like the last decision for like President Trump to recognize Jerusalem as a as an Israeli capital and destroy our dream to have our like normal country with our capital? Do you think that it's working on the ground? I don't think so.
And so,
and about like, sorry, about one state solution. For me, as a Palestinian, and all of the Palestinians, they don't mind any kind of solution, one state solution or two state solution. But one state solution, if the Israeli willing to live in equal side alongside with the Palestinians, I don't think so. Because what's going on the ground in Jerusalem and how they are like forcing the people to kick them out their homes to West Bank from Jerusalem, it's not working on the ground. The last thing I want to say, like, it is not a conflict between equal parts, and they have to sit on the table and the hate will disappear. This is a colony conflict based on ethnic cleansing and religion, and racism, oppression, occupation, and apartheid. This is what's going on in Palestine. So, as there is no huge country supporting and make a pressure on the two sides to have a solution will be never happened, because we are a Palestinian so weak, we don't have the power to have any option, one state or two state. So this is my personal opinion.
That's Islam Maraka from the International Solidarity Movement, who's on a tour now around the United States, talking with people, several different venues here in Madison. While he was here, now he's going off to some other venues to talk about and speak with like the listeners who are listening to this right now about what the situation is on the ground in Palestine right now. And so if there is, maybe this is a question for both Islam and Cassandra, if there is no solution except these drastic ones that seem not to be in the offing, what is it that those people who might be listening now who are interested in at least reducing the level of violence there, if not coming to a complete solution, what can we do? Those who are listening now, how can they help short of going and being part of an international solidarity team?
Okay. I think the Palestinian case, it shouldn't be the Palestinian, like these people who are living there, they should take care of themselves. It's not like this. It's a human right case. That means every human around the world should take his position in this case and trying to support as much as he can. Everybody have a friends. Unfortunately, as I see, so much people around the world, they don't know what's going on. They think there is conflict between like huge states or like strong states or something like that. They don't know that the Palestinians have nothing and the Israeli is a huge country, Israel. I think everyone have a friends, have a family, should talk about the case. Always tell the people the stories and watching the news and sharing what's going on and be part of the resistance. This is our task in this tour, to tell the people what's going on and retrying to ask them to be involved and to participate in the resistance, the nonviolence resistance in Palestine. That last thing I would love to say, resistance in Palestine, whatever you want it to be, as like if you have like a special skills, you can be working in refugees camps with the kids teaching English language, arts, any kind of thing you have. Or you can be participate in military direct action in nonviolent resistance, like the weekly demonstration in Hebron. We go there asking to dismantle the ghetto and to take out the settlers from the heart of the city. And this is, I think, what we can do. Yeah.
Cassandra, would you encourage people to come over and do the kind of work that you're doing?
Yes, I strongly encourage people to go and learn. It's what we see in the mainstream media is so not representative of what Palestinian families are facing on a daily level there. So I really do encourage people both to go and also to seek out alternative sources and to learn more about the situation and struggle to understand it better. But I also, though, I would just add that as Americans, we do have some other a couple of other avenues to engage, I guess, in this, and one is through our to question our funding of Israel, and the other is to engage in boycott, divestment, and sanctions of Israeli companies. So we, the United States, and I think this is a conservative estimate, $8 million a day. So we are funding health care for Israelis. We're funding settlement construction. We're funding the construction of settler-only roads that further and further and further divide and make difficult daily life for Palestinians. We're funding the helicopters and the planes that are flying over these firing zones. We're funding the ordnance that's being exploded. We're funding the tear gas that kids are having to walk through to get to school. We're funding the sound grenades. We are spending a huge amount of dollars as Americans when we pay taxes, and we can question that. You know, any one of us can speak out against that, and especially progressives need to speak out loudly with their progressive legislative representation. I mean, it's not a, you know, Tammy Baldwin needs to hear from people in Wisconsin that we don't want to be spending that amount of money paying for Israel to further and further and further push and push and push Palestinians into smaller and smaller and smaller spaces. So, and then the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is a very strong way for average people to engage with a power. And we've seen, we have a lot of history, both within the U.S. through our labor movement, and you look at the history of South Africa. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions have been nonviolent tools for as long as we've had money, and that's a long time. And if you don't think it's working, just look at the pushback from Israel. So Governor Walker in Wisconsin just signed into law a bill that requires that companies contracting with the state over a certain amount of money sign a loyalty oath to a foreign country. They need to sign a statement saying that they will not engage in boycott, divestment, or sanctions activities against Israel. So that could include conceivably a church that contracts with the state to provide after-school daycare facilities. It could include construction companies bidding on a road. It could include all kinds of people who are now bound to support a foreign country in oppressing another foreign country in order to get a state contract in our state. So this passed on a voice vote. Democrats in the state, some opposed that, but some chose not to make that a standout issue.
And so, Cassandra, you're saying that this is something that that if folks want to have an impact on the situation, they can do. They can speak out against that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're absolutely running out of time, no. And I want to try to wrap it up. But thanks for those suggestions.
Money is part of the problem, and America controls a lot of the flow of money to Israel.
Okay,
we've been speaking with Cassandra Dixon, who spends a few months each year in the spring in the West Bank, the occupied territories, and works with a group called Dove.
Operation Dove. And Islam Maraka, who works for the International Solidarity Movement in Hebron. You've been listening to the Access Hour. I wish both of you the best of luck and support in the work that you're doing. I'd like to thank both of you very much for joining us for this program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to close out today's Access Hour with a Palestinian nationalist song. It's called Dami Falestini, sung here by Mohammed Asaf. The English translation of the chorus is, "Keeping my oath, following my religion, you will find me on my land. I belong to my people. I sacrifice my soul for them. My blood is Palestinian, Palestinian, Palestinian. My blood is Palestinian."
على عهدي على ديني على أرض تلاقيني أنا لأهلي أنا فديهم أنا دمي فلسطيني 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 أنا دمي فلسطيني
listening to the Access Hour. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. Remember, though, that this show relies on your ideas. An application to produce a program can be found on the internet at wortfm.org. Look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Music, talk, comedy, drama, or whatever can be conveyed over the radio, the Access Hour is anything you want it to be. And you're listening to the Access Hour. It's almost over. It's 7:59:30. This is WORT 89.9 FM and HD in Madison. There will be another Access Hour next week. And something wonderful is about to happen at this very moment or pretty near soon. Talk to you later. 7:59:46 and counting. Good night.
High Noon Saloon presents Kevin Morby with Hand Habits on Monday, April 30th at 8 p.m. Singer-songwriter Kevin Morby spent time as a bassist for the band Woods and the leader of the Babies before cutting his first solo album, Harlem River, in 2013. His music moves between folk and rock, and his latest record, Singing Saw, was met with critical acclaim. Hand Habits is Meg Duffy, a guitarist who has worked with many musicians, including headliner Kevin Morby. Meg writes dark, intoxicating songs about life on the road and trying to make ends meet while creating art. High Noon Saloon presents Kevin Morby with openers Hand Habits on Monday, April 30th. This is WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org.
Heads up, Madison music lovers, it's DJ L. Serpentine letting you know about my next live musical guest on the Rattlesnake Shake. On Friday, April 27th, I'll be here on WORT from 8 o'clock to 11 p.m. Central, and at 9 o'clock p.m. sharp, I'll be joined by local rockers Royal Station, who call their music a sonic collage of blues, gospel, and psychobilly warped into a psychedelic, industrial, spooky dreamscape of